The Ballad of Heartwork is a new series from The Heart is a Dungeon. Most of the story will be whimsical in nature, with moments of fear or sadness. Please take care of yourself and check the content warnings for each episode. And thank you so much for listening.
We see the end of the story. Not our story, but the story nonetheless. We see a world empty of all sentient life and the ruin of the largest city that anyone has ever dreamed. There is a long unkept promise, there is a name yet to be read aloud, and there is you. Not a god, not a mortal, but more of an idea. More of a season than an angel, and more like a star than a monster. You are either all that is left, or you are the beginning of something new. When we turn to your page and begin to read, where do we find you in this broken world, and what do we see when we close our eyes and see you?
Something has changed about Bit since their encounter with Reeve the Echo. Bit, when you first notice them, is not witnessed by sight. You now hear Bit as rattling inside the chest of this stubby-legged, long-armed, big-headed little automaton is now a glass bottle and a flower, a gift from meeting a friend. There is now a ringing wherever Bit trots. There is a light sound as they run through the forest, excited for the first time that they can remember, at least. They are moved by joy. The ringing provides Bit something else new. A feeling that they only got when looking down at their arms previously. A feeling that they exist and are here. And not just moving mindlessly, because they have to create, and they have to do, and it's never enough, but that they are here because they exist, and maybe that's enough. And maybe there are wonderful things to make, and find, and see, and listen to. The world is full of wonderful realizations for the little automaton. Once, everything seemed so big, while Pit was so small. And while that was once a reminder of Bit's own insignificance, as they see the mice scurrying under bushes and the flying squirrels leaping from branch to branch, they realize that to be small in a world this large doesn't mean it's suffocating. It means it's a playground. It means you can notice the little things. And so Bit sits down and looks at the world around himself. Bit makes a move for the flowers before realizing that there are bees on them. And then Bit makes a move for the pine needles before realizing that there are worms dancing in them. Bit's not used to this. Bit, who awoke in a dead city. Now, every piece of potential sculpture belongs to someone, belongs to this world. And so Bit looks at their hands. What could they possibly do? They don't want to take a piece of this world and twist it into something else if it's one of these creatures' homes. So Bit thinks. Bit thinks for anywhere between 5 and 121 minutes. And as Bit thinks, Bit starts to rattle, to shake back and forth. The sound of the glass bottle rattling too. And then Bit thinks again. It's a wonderful new feeling. So Bit rattles the other way, and then the other way, and then back again. And Bit discovers music. Doesn't invent it, but discovers it. Their only instrument being the little gift, the bottle, from their friend, which now chimes through the forest as Bit learns how sound moves. A new thought appears in Bit's head. Though the space inside of me is small, the sounds it can make are infinite, slightly different from each other. Rattling left and rattling right, it sounds a little different each time. So, maybe there's a way, with these infinite sounds that can come out of one automaton, that on the inside, Bit is infinite. Bit doesn't end. Any combination of sounds and rattles and chimes and tinks can be made. Perhaps though small on the outside, this act of creation does not need to be so small.
And maybe you're not as small as you feel. The wood opens to you. Shy beavers begin a soft rhythm on wood that they love. There are birds that sing with confidence, and you hear bells that are not your own. As a beautiful stag steps into this space, with holiday lights and chimes wrapped up in the massive antlers, ringing out lovely. Having been drawn nearby by your song, as it has a song all unique of its own.
Bit freezes at the stag.
And the stag freezes at Bit.
It is so much larger. And as Bit remains aware of himself, this is a creature that is much larger than the mice. Larger than the squirrels, larger than the ladybugs. But Bit starts to rattle again. as Bit discovered music, so too does Bit discover moving one arm and then the other. And the automaton finds dancing. A little sway, picking up one stubby foot and then the other, with nothing but spontaneity, Bit starts to dance for the stag. The automaton is changed. They are the same individual. It is the same mechanical thing. But time and meeting others has changed it. And so, if there could be a smile on a face that is mostly just a lolling head with large eyes, it could be felt. This is beyond what I was made to do, nags a tiny memory in the back of Bit's mind. Or is it? And then Bit starts to think. And it starts to think back. Before this. What was I? What was this place? And Bit's dancing starts to slow. Were there others like it? Did it always have long arms, stubby legs, and four fingers on each hand, so short of the five that would make its creation so much easier? Bit thinks and thinks and thinks. Bit wants to sculpt, but it can't stop thinking. Bit wants to make music, but it can't stop thinking. Bit wants to dance, but it still can't stop thinking. And so, they look down at their hands once more, and their eight fingers total, which it wiggles. Before Bit understands what's going on, Bit trots over to a pond, and Bit looks past the lily pads on its surface, past the dragonflies that hover above it, to look at its own reflection, to look at this echo of itself, made so familiar by their encounter with Reeve. But that was Reeve taking the automaton's form. This is Bit. Who is Bit? And so Bit picks up a rock. Bit picks up a rock that fits in their hand and takes it to a larger rock. And it makes sure that there are no ants crawling on it as Bit starts to scrape the small rock against the bigger rock. A more forceful action than the automaton is used to doing. Until very slowly, process perhaps taking hours, days, unimportant. Bit scrapes a round head, round eyes, long arms, and short legs into this rock. Bit is now going to make a roll with their shape statistic to see how this self-portrait comes out. Something in Bit is changed once again. As with a 3 and a 2 for a total of 5, the automaton is experiencing doubt, confusion, a tugging feeling at the visage of its own self, reflected on the rock made by its own hands. The automaton thinks to how the tall stag might see its form, to how the community of bees never alone might see it. And so Bit remembers to add another touch to this image of itself, a crack going down the center of its chest. For it is small, and it is broken.
Hey campers, have you heard of season 5 of 5 GMs in a Trench Coat from Inside the Tent? You haven't? Well, let us tell you about it.
A nice, green, natural regional park. This is Hidden Falls Regional Park. For our purposes in our world, it's a bit larger than it actually is. It is the summer of 1983, and it is all of your first time getting to stay at Hidden Falls.
We promise it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a story of 3 childhood friends going across the Americas in 1987 using Kids on Bikes 2nd edition. So grab a blanket, make some coffee. The first 3 episodes are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
We see smoke clearing, the sounds of battle fading, and in the background, the bone-to-bone click of dice as we look to one another here around this table surrounding where our story took place. Our imagination easily gets the best of us because we use Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from. They also offer downloadable model files for users to 3D print their unique designs at home for when reinforcements are certainly needed. Hero Forge is adding new items to the catalog every week so that the tavern will always have that mysterious guest. And with subscriptions starting at just $3.99, you'll have everything you need with Hero Forge at heroforge.com. Hey there, Sky Darling. Why don't you set your broken heart down and let me tell you about Orbital Blues Month. This beloved and fantastic game from Soul Muppet is truly the hero that we deserve, as they are blessing us with even more content from some of the most wanted outlaws in the Orbital Blues third-party publishing space. From new adventures and factions to mechanics and audio dramas, the universe will never feel more alive or groovy. Orbital Blues Month is a group collaboration on BackerKit launching April 1st. And if you back multiple projects, there's even a limited edition cassette you can get your grubby swan song hands on. Orbital Blues is one of the most streamlined and replayable beautiful systems out there, and it's about time it had a month all to its own.
In the coastline of the forest, where there are towering rocks that are sharp and hard to climb, and the water is very dark. There is no before for them, not in the way that the others think of it. For Nakhna, there is only a stretch of unbeing, a hush between their thoughts. Just waiting. And then suddenly, something. A rolling darkness. Gaping maw that never really stays in one place. Too many eyes to count. The air above a fire, crackling with little flecks of embers, but they are hiding behind this voice that talks without Nakhna speaking or moving their lips. Small whispers or screams or little faint sobbing that grows louder if they get close to you. But somewhere underneath, their height is not the colossus they seem to be. Their hands are clutched around something. Tiny little fingers. Tiny feet. Well, no one's meant to see that. The waiting, or the weight of being here. The last time before they were in the unbeing of it all, everyone left and forgot Nakhna. And they were nothing again, in the stretch again. And then when they awoke, it doesn't feel like sleeping, it just feels like continuing. So when they're stretching their legs, their maw, their all their eyes, they're just glancing from place to place. If there is a face or a tree or something in this forest behind them, they react first. A growl.
What are you afraid of? What can I be?
The water is distressed as a romp of otters dive beneath the surface of the shallows. What would you resemble if you resembled hunger? Because that is what they fear.
But Nakhna is hunger. They don't change their form, they just show the emptiness that they are. The emptiness they could have in their bellies. You remember? You remember the last time you ate? Nakhna takes over a couple of stones, trying to see what is underneath them. And if little creatures scamper away, as everyone usually does. If Nakhna's nearby the forest, and if they could hear the glass bottles and see them in the distance, they'll think to themselves, maybe mutter in their many voices,
"They keep something inside, don't they? So small, so delicate." Do not know how to hold things that do not break.
And so they pull their hand back, and their large maw grasp outside with a big bite. But they hide their tears underneath the shroud of black. The world is filling up with shape, of all different shapes, and there are spaces in between the nothing that Nakna fills. The hunger in the otters, the chill after the sun, and they look up to where it is twilight. It's coming, that feeling, that emptiness. They fit where they need to fit. They have never fit with anyone else. They were never meant to. When they walk in the paths, they step outside the footprints and let the sand fill in where there was nothing before. For every new step that is explored, Nakna is meant to fill the space so that those steps are remembered.
The shadows stretch long, like the story of this place, all braced to try again. A beautiful stag runs out of the woods with a crown filled with festive lights and sounds, and the stag stops, breathing, still. The stag sees your face and imagines a winter alone, without grass or kin or warmth. And that fear passes over his face as he leaps into the wood, a distant rattle audible somewhere hidden within the trees. Every animal scurries and hides. Every animal but a consortium of octopi. They move parallel with you in the shallows, in the tide pool, because they are afraid of nothing.
Nakna's little feet, their fists are kind of curled together, first at the stag. There is this desperate wish to touch it and to be part of it, and seeing it run off then. They see the little creatures run off again, away from them. Fine. I scare you too. And the winter that they had shown to the stag, and the way they touch everything on the ground with their feet, they stomp towards the path, and they see the octopi. When they look at the octopi, they start smelling like burnt ash and copper in your mouth. Why don't you run? And they take out this little hand that comes out behind the skin of like textured obsidian. This little hand pokes octopi. Why don't you run?
Why don't you swim?
Nobody stuck around to teach me.
What are you to something that is not afraid of you?
The maw, the eyes, everything drops down. And this little child holding a tiny broken toy, not knowing how to fix it, just squats down next to the octopi. They skip a couple rocks, and they don't think about how far deep the rocks fall. They climb atop a boulder. They don't think about the scrape on their knees. Nakna hungers, like an ache. But they know for some reason someone is going to bring them food, and that feeds them. They smile at the edge of the water and actually say goodbye to something that is comfortable. And will walk into the forest, into something unknown. They turn to the Octa family. All things are drowned, friend. But there is still air in the spaces between. Do you wish to join me? It's a 10 plus 2 for a 12. I get a 6 and a 4. The octopi family, they will remember through becoming. So when they slip through the water, their skin will shift, not just in color, but in texture. And they create these long tunnels underneath that create beautiful tide pools around a lighthouse. The lights don't call ships to harbor, it calls those who are lost. The look upon the tide pools. And remember, and the Octopi family will be dedicated to remember this by shifting into the forms they wish, almost as if they are perfect camouflages. So they not only hold memory, but they wear them. And if one is so as lucky as Nakna was to touch one, they will be able to share in that memory. Not just to see it, but to feel it. Like pressing into sand for the first time and disturbing it. Seeing the lingering note of something before the tide takes it away. And by becoming, they keep the lighthouse here and remain happily even on land.
Is this the first time you have created something that feels more like a dream than a nightmare?
It's probably the first time it felt like a dream.
The automaton does not know how it got there, and now it only feels the feeling of falling. It tries to remember, but thinking backwards is still a skill that it has not quite gotten the hang of yet, and it doesn't remember how it got into this falling box. Did it wander through the forest? And then, without looking upwards, as its head is so heavy and it is so small, not realize that it went into this moving box, this lift commandeered by working people of a time long past. But is that important? Because it is falling. And the world is rushing around it, and it is falling. And it is so aware of its own weight as it is falling, and the box it is in is falling, and it cannot reach the lever to stop it, as its arms are too short and its fingers are too few, and it attempts to stand on its toes that it does not have, and still cannot reach the lever to stop the world from falling, falling, faster, faster. And it cannot change the world around it, and it cannot grab onto anything, and it cannot make, because it is falling, and perhaps soon it will crash.
Of course. It sees sunlight, a rich, beautiful red-orange field of flowers. Crystalline sky, air so crisp you can feel it sharp against your cheek. A landing so soft, dirt, grass. Even the bark on the tree nearby just... not at all hurtful. Maybe there's a crook in it to lay your head and sleep. And every time they turn their head or look around, Nakna is stretched across the sky, or curled in the smallest crack. A flicker in the periphery. When their weight, when the foot steps down onto the dirt, it shifts for a second, as if something is wrong.
This is so unusual. As Bit doesn't know how it got here, but Bit does feel something familiar. The feeling like knowing you are surrounded by creatures in the forest, but when it turns around, it feels like whatever else is there is just out of sight. And so Bit wants to enjoy the flowers, the poppies. But Bit is troubled by the lack of bees, as it now knows that bees love flowers. Bit is troubled by the thing on the corner of its eye that it just barely cannot see. Bit is troubled by the fact that these flowers almost seem to be too many, surrounding it, swallowing it, too many to pick up, too many to do anything but drown in, as it is small and it is broken.
Nakna waits. Waits, and with their hand, their little hand, completely unseen, they part the flowers. They do not bend. The stems stand tall, but the color shifts. Not at once, not all together, but patch by patch, the brilliant, beautiful red of the poppies starts seeping into the earth like spilled ink, leaving behind something pale, washed out, like a faded painting left out in the sun. Nakna starts creeping up behind them, a little nervous.
What?
The voice behind Bit scares the automaton, and so it attempts to run, but its legs are too short. It attempts to brush the poppies out of the way, but its fingers are too unwieldy, so Bit falls and rolls onto its back to look up at the sky.
Nocna rushes forward as soon as they see them fall, and they push away anything that they could use to bring themselves up a little farther away from their hands. But when they rush up to them and put this visage of someone with long arms and a colossal shape, and they hover over, "You're not running."
"I cannot run. My legs are too short."
"Are you not afraid?"
"What is afraid?"
"Nocna, what are you to something that is not afraid of you?"
They make the poppies large and start growing big and big. "You will never reach."
"And so I will sit."
The large visage starts coming down, all the texture of the obsidian, the sharpness starts pulling back into itself. And probably the same height as Bit. This presence, this tiny little girl points and says, "You! You can't reach! Wait. Everything's really big now."
"You get used to it."
"I don't get used to anything. Everything is used to me." And they start, like, trying to get big again and pushing the shards out. And when they can't, they look back and say, I'm not used to it."
"You are not used to it because you are so many things. I am one thing, and you can become anything. Of course you're not used to it. The world you move through changes as you do. Bit loves the nightmare because it is a reminder that Bit, for all of its metal circuits and wires, is alive, can feel, can fear, can remember things to be afraid of. This thing in front of it is a part of life. And so Bit feels happy that it is alive. And so Bit hopes that the nightmare will remember that it scares the otters so it can recognize danger. That it moves the hearts of mortals so they know what to care about. That it is not just a part of life. That in many ways, it is a reflection, an echo of it."
What is the last thing that Nocna sees when Bit offers them love?
Bit does for Nocna what it did for Reeve. Bit reaches into the crack in its chest and opens up the hollow cavity so that Nocna may have a home in the automaton. That in accepting fear, and doubt, and living anyway, the automaton can know what it's like to live, and so Bit welcomes it in.
Nocta's little hands shake, and their little calves shake, and these big ears well up in their eyes. I'd never had a home. And they dash down this rock, and as they do, their form starts growing again, black and sharp. But as they come closer and closer to Bit, it is an older form that closes that hollow point and cradles the lost in the dark and pulls Bit in. You do not need to give. I still accept. And when they do, they pull down like the curtain that is the world, one full sweep at a time. And this empty elevator that they were in, Nocna holds Bit. And they look up with this little smile. And where the doors are supposed to open to a tunnel, they wish to believe. That is a 10.
Dear listeners, once again, believe is the only move that is a total failure if one rolls under 10.
Beautiful motes of light just open up a path to a place that shouldn't exist, tucked away in this space that shouldn't have been found if someone didn't fall. It is small, but infinite inside because of the thousands of shelves and books filled with worlds that were never written yet. And as they carry Bit, they help them up. And the end of this library, there's this chair, a light, where the switch is right, just right. And a book opened up to a page that ends with the line, and then Bit woke up.
We close the book. Just for now, there is still such a long ways left to go. There's still so much heart work left to attend to if we hope to one day resemble a place one could call a home. Thank you for tuning in to The Heart is a Dungeon for this episode of The Ballad of Heartwork. Let's meet our incredible guests. Bit, it's been such a pleasure to have you for your second chapter. Do you have a small name?
I think so. Hi, you can call me Julie, Julian, or Julie Ciel, J-U-L-I-C-I-E-L, online. If you want to listen to some of my writing, I am the co-creator and co-writer of the award-winning audio drama, The Realm Tree, a fantasy story about how fairies get their wings, a 30-episode coming-of-age story about fairies climbing a tree to the sky, action, fantasy, societal commentary, etc. You can see me promoting indie TTRPGs on Roll D5, the tabletop game network that I co-run, as well as streaming games, tabletop, and of the video variety on my own Twitch channel, Julie Ciel, J-U-L-I-C-I-E-L. You can keep up with the variety of projects I do, because it's a lot to list in an end card at JulieCL on Blue Sky and Twitch.
And Nakna, do you have a name? I would sleep on it, but I'm a little freaked out.
Hello, I am Maz, or Megan Wright. I am a voice actor in this wonderful space where I get to play a lot of wonderful characters. I also produce and put together wonderful solo TTRPG cinematic audio dramas that are my way to create in this incredible space, and run and host games over at our community channel, Starcrawl RPG, where we try to create the games that we really wish to be part of as like new players and BIPOC players. So aside from that, you can probably find me everywhere at It's Mozzarell, or voicing an NPC or character at your next table, or playing a video game, usually.
And I'm Ra-Ra, but that's enough about that.